Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
If you're a regular listener to this show, then you know that I do not use the word work in relation to marriage. I actually believe that if you're working, which to me is going out and plowing the back 40 in 100-degree heat and 100% humidity, then there's something that you don't know about marriage. And probably what that is that marriage is, I know you're not supposed to modify the word unique, but it is a truly unique relationship because it is a meeting of equals. And therein lays the problem. The struggles that most couples experience are due to seeing each other as adversaries instead of working as a team. They push and pull at each other, trying to make the other one into someone more like themselves. And guys, it's not your fault. It's just that no one has ever taught anybody how to be married in a better way. Now, what I've got for you is I've got good news, because all of that changes today. My guests, John and Beverly Meyerson, are going to tell you how to banish the struggles from your marriage right now, starting today. He is a licensed clinical social worker, and she's a couples coach. Together, they are the authors of Power Snuggles, Your Path to Vibrant and Lasting Love. So, John and Beverly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Now, I know that your book is talking about moving struggles into snuggles. So can you tell people a little bit about that mindset and what made you connect to those two?
Well, we found out when we were writing this book that people have a struggle in their marriage, and they don't know how to get out of it. And when they have a struggle, they keep blaming each other. They get on each other's nerves, and it's very frustrating. And what we did is we sent out a newsletter for 5 years called From Power Struggles to Power Snuggles, indicating what a struggle was and how to resolve the struggle on each conflict. And we got such favorable reviews from our readers and our clients that we decided to publish it in a book.
Well, terrific. So are there common struggles that most couples or many couples go through?
Well, in our book, we have actually 81 different conflicts, but let me back up a little. A power struggle, it's a disagreement that evolves into an argument.
Right.
Each partner tries to win the argument, believing they are right. Each tries to control the other. And as you introduced, the problem of marriage is that they don't listen to each other, and they may become angry, tense, and loud. And one of the good examples, I think, is if Beverly and I go through a very simple power struggle, and then we'll go tell you how to change that to
okay.
A power snuggle.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
So I might start out and say to Beverly, oh, no, I forgot to use the 20% off coupon at the store.
I can't believe you forgot to use it. You always forget things like that. You know that we're tight on money.
Why didn't you remind me? And I don't always do it. You know you're not perfect. Last week you lost the key to the file cabinet, and it took us a day to find it.
Okay.
So this is a typical conflict where each blames the other and feels awkward, and they don't know how to stop. Now,
right, and in addition, they change topics too. Because first, it's you didn't use the coupon because you're tight on money. To she lost the key to the file cabinet, so now you're not even talking about the same things.
to counterpunch,
right,
and control.
Using defense mechanisms, exactly.
Yeah, but we tell people, you know, very simply, if I say, oh no, I forgot to use the 20% off coupon at the store.
No problem. I know you got a lot on your mind. I'll use it Thursday when I go out.
Thanks, hon. And I hug. I mean, it's simple if you don't push the other one away. And you might not always agree, but if you start listening to each other and admiring and appreciating the other person, as you say, the work is no longer there. And we've been married for almost 20 years, and we've had very, very few conflicts. We have disagreements, and we listen to each other, and it works. So
right.
We want to pass that on to others, yeah.
I'm so glad that you phrased it that way, because I phrase it the same way. I tell people that you and your partner are going to disagree, but interpreting that or thinking that that therefore means it's you're in conflict doesn't have to happen. Conflict is actually a choice, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a choice, and if we look at it as two people trying to put a puzzle together, when you have a problem, instead of blaming the other for the problem, which often people do, then you get together and you get invigorated, even though you don't always solve the problem, but you feel good about it.
Yeah, I mean, couples will always have disagreements. Now, disagreements can turn into conflict. But
right.
In our office over the years, we've always emphasized that it's really important to try to see the situation if you possibly can. It may take a while to cool off first, but then to look at it and say to yourself, what is my part in this? And also to think about the other person. Now why is he or she reacting in such a way? I mean, and usually it does go back to their values, maybe values from the time they grew up. I mean, it's just different. They see things differently, and we see things differently. And so it's a question of realizing that you're both right in the way you feel, but how do you get those two rights to, you know, to gel and to feel better instead of feeling like somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose?
Right, and that's what I meant by, you know, we set ourselves up as adversaries. And I will say that a lot of times because people are both right about the way they feel and also how they interpret a situation. I'm sure you guys have had this in your office where one person will say, well, this is what happened. And the other person will say, well, that's not what you said. And then they're into an argument about this is, you know, and I tell people, if you don't have a video camera or a tape recorder, we're never going to solve this argument, because it's like that old game of telephone where we actually hear different things.
Right. Absolutely.
Even if you had the video recorder, we find out people hear things different the same way. We give examples in the book, like a mother saying to a daughter, "You put parsley on the rice," and she says, "Well, why are you blaming me?" And the mother said, "I wasn't blaming you. All I said was that you put parsley on the rice."
And I've never seen that before. I was just interested in what you're doing.
So the same words convey different meanings depending on how you say it.
Of course, what people don't know from the beginning is that this mother and daughter have a history of the mother being critical of the daughter. So
right,
you know, right away, the daughter is going to be defensive no matter what the mother says.
In fact, couples, when they come in, we tell them, forget about some of that history that you've had with each other. Let's start a new history from day one.
Do you give people tools to do that? Because that's a really hard thing to do. Because first off, I actually have to be aware that the history is being triggered. So how do you help couples through that?
Well, first of all, when we start every session with new couples, they come in and sit down facing each other. We're both in the office with them, and we'll say to one of them, why do you think your partner wanted to come into the office today? Why did she want to make an appointment? And then he will guess. And we do it the other way as well. So where she guesses why he's in the office. And oftentimes they really don't have much of a clue as to why the other one is in the office. But from the very beginning, they're realizing that they're not trying to think about what the other person is thinking about. They've just got their own agenda. They want to bring the other one in to fix them. And so that is the beginning of trying to make these changes, is to try to see how the other person is thinking and begin to like them again, because you understand why they're thinking the way they do. You start to validate them and say to them, wow, from what you're saying, it makes sense you feel that way because, and you tell them why it makes sense. Now, that doesn't mean you're agreeing. It never means you're agreeing, but it means that you believe that they believe what they're saying.
The second step we do with couples is we see them individually. I might sit down with a man or woman or reverse in Beverly with the other person, and we get into some of their problems, what their background is. So we can interpret what they've said, and we get back together. We can reframe some of the things they're saying so that the other can hear it if they can't hear it directly from that partner.
Right, because oftentimes they are very angry when they come in, like you say,
sure.
And just to say, well, erase all that is not easy. So we have to kind of back up so that they're not feeling that anger, and that may take, you know, a few sessions to do that so they can start to really hear each other.
And that's a critical component, and it's one of the things that I work on, and because it goes against that common thing about don't go to bed angry. And I'm thinking, oh, great, you're angry and you're tired, and now you're going to try to resolve some kind of a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what I tell people is you've got to figure out a way to manage whatever it is you're feeling, because that's – feeling it is not the problem. Acting on it when you're feeling it almost always is the problem. But that's usually when people want to solve whatever the situation is, like the example you gave where you say offhand, oh, shoot, I forgot to use the coupon. And then the other person is like, what? And now you're off to the races because nobody ever bothers to stop and breathe.
Exactly. And so that's why we were saying before that if there is a conflict, the one who's really feeling the most emotional needs to stop a minute and say to themselves, I've got to think this through, and I need some time. And they should say to the other person, look, I want to talk to you about this. I really want to have a discussion, but can we do it later? And then it's up to that person to suggest a time that's convenient for both of them. It might be 3 hours later, and it might be a day later. But by then, they've cooled off, and during that time, the person who's particularly emotional needs to say, what is my part in this, and why did I have a reaction like this? I mean, inside, I didn't yell, but I wanted to. Why am I feeling this way? And many times, they start to think differently. Well, he had a point, or she had a point, and they don't feel quite as strongly about it. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't discuss it, but they're in a better place to discuss it.
And how do we teach this to people? Because I'm not sure that this is, I mean, now you and I do this when we're in our offices with people, and it makes sense, and what you guys are saying is parallels to what I tell my clients. But one of the problems, and you guys said it earlier, is that when people come in, it's like, okay, fix my partner. They're the ones with the problem. I'm right. They're the ones with the problem. And so how do you get people to look at their part in it when they have a built-in scapegoat?
Well, sometimes we listen to their discussion, their argument, and then we actually change chairs, and we ask them to sit where we are, and we start talking as if they were talking, but we reframe some of the things. And then at the end, as we talk, we say, well, I guess you're feeling that way because, you know, you've talked that way. It makes sense that you would be upset. So we take the next step trying to show them, you know, what the possibilities are so they can look at us as an outsider, which is them, to see what is going on. And once, a lot of times they say, aha, now I see what's happening between us.
Sometimes they even find it comical. And I mean,
so you guys are role-playing them. You're kind of showing them what it is you've seen.
Well, what we see, and we try to be as objective as possible. And but until that anger is diminished some, nobody can see through it. So what you're saying there is right. It's very, very difficult. And, of course, the longer a couple has been together, the more challenging it is. I mean, the easiest couple to work with are those who aren't quite married yet, and we can give them advice. And I mean, it's too bad that all couples don't have counseling before they decide to be a couple, because it's so important. But, I mean, they've never been taught how to communicate. And
exactly.
These are tools that we teach. I mean, it isn't just for couples. It's for colleagues at work. It's for dealing with your children. I mean, these are communication tools. That means you need to listen empathically. You need to validate. I mean, when people stop being validated, and they're usually validated when people start dating, you know, they feel good about themselves, the other person.
Right.
But as soon as people start feeling threatened in any way and they're not validated, it's all defense mechanisms coming into play, which is very difficult.
And we teach them actually from the very first session to give appreciations. A lot of times they haven't heard an appreciation from the other one for months. The other one
right.
is great. Well, if I appreciate you, that means I'm going to start agreeing, and you're going to say, see, you're right. But we set a question up to say, I appreciate you because, and the other one repeats back, you appreciate me because. And we tell them to add, and that's so special to me. So it deepens the appreciation. And then once they start doing appreciations, even writing little notes to each other or what they say, it makes them so much easier for them to discuss issues, because in back of their minds they say, well, you know, he really loves me. I've heard it. So he's not trying to hurt me. You know, as you said, we're not adversaries. We're lovers who want to resolve this issue, and it reinforces the idea once they feel that appreciation.
And the other thing is with an appreciation. Yes, go ahead.
This is Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with John and Beverly Meyerson, couples coaches and authors, about how to stop struggling and start snuggling in your marriage. So you guys are talking about this, and, you know, I do exactly the same thing, but how do we get to couples who have not walked through our doors? I know you have this book, so can you walk me through the book about how you teach in the book couples that are, you know, this process with couples of moving from this place of hurt and anger into this place of love and acceptance?
Well, a lot of the books on relationships go into deep theory and philosophy.
Right.
They're very hard to read. And we decided to write a book that was unique to most self-help relationship books. And the format is a series of two-page real-life struggles, conflicts in different relationships. And the struggles are engaging because people can get right in to the
right.
Dialogue.
They can go, yeah, my husband and I, or my partner and I, do this very same thing, right?
Exactly.
So they start with a dialogue, which is just like a movie clip, and right away they've already recognized their part in it.
So that's the first part. So they see what the conflict is, and they recognize it. For example, a very common one is how to load the dishwashers. People fighting over how to load the dishwashers. We even made a video on our website, Power Snuggles, to show how couples can argue over loading the dishwasher.
So you guys have been in my kitchen, haven't you? You guys were in my kitchen.
Exactly.
It's a very common complaint that we get. It's really funny.
And the second part is, it was called The Road to Power Snuggling, and we tell what's going on here when two people are arguing over arguing over how to load the dishwasher. And in the dishwasher case, in the snuggle that we described there, we say he wants every dish lined up and every cup in there because his goal is to make it as much as most efficient as possible to clean the dishes.
Leak them out of water or whatever.
And her goal is very different. Her goal is, I got to get these dishes out because I have to go up to talk to the kids and I have housework and this or that, or it might be reversed. And so I'm throwing the dishes in and it doesn't matter where each glass goes because it's much more important that I get the job done. Then we go into the third section. It's called sustaining your snuggle. And in the case of the dishwasher, we have a solution for every one of these conflicts. And in the dishwasher one, we say, okay, whoever's loading the dishwasher does it their way. If the other one doesn't like the way they load it, they can load the dishwasher. But love is much more important than arguing over how many glasses you should get clean.
Yeah, it really is a control issue. One feels when they're told how to do it that they're being controlled by the other. And
right.
They both have good intentions. I mean, again, you can say both are right. But when they get involved in a situation like this, nobody feels that they're winning. And it doesn't go anywhere. So, again, they have to step back and look at what's happening.
Right. But isn't it a lot of times that they're not really even fighting or arguing about how the dishes are in the dishwasher, but what that actually means deep down? I mean, because I hear this all the time where people will be hurt by the fact that their partner doesn't do something their way, even though maybe they've requested it, and then they take it as, well, my partner doesn't. If my partner really loved me, they would do it the way that makes me feel good. And so because they're not doing it that way, then it's really about my not feeling loved, or as you gave the example, I actually have something else that's a greater priority to me than worrying about exactly where the dishes are.
Right, and again, it's not that they're trying to be mean, but this could even go back to childhood issues where in their family they didn't feel heard or they didn't feel respected. They didn't get complimented, whatever, and they can't get enough of that. They need the good stuff. So a lot of it is knowing who your partner is and what their vulnerabilities are. And when you do know that, when you learn that, then you can feed into that and help them instead of trying to antagonize them by being critical.
And everyone has these emotional allergies that often are developed in childhood. So if you grew up in an alcoholic family, you have an emotional allergy from just anybody sipping a glass of beer.
Right.
You're
going to
react one way. And somebody who's grown up without that is much more accepting of drinking, but you have to know your partner, and we tell them that.
And it's funny because there's this idea that, well, if I love my partner, I know my partner. And my husband and I have been together for 30 years, and I said something to him probably a couple of months ago, and he just looked at me like, I have no idea who you are. And I actually had to sit down and connect the dots for him that my point or my position wasn't really as out of line with other things that I believed. He just couldn't line them all up. And when I said, well, no, it's consistent with this, 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 and this, he goes, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. But in the moment, he was like, where's the pod and what have you done with my wife? Because this person standing in front of me is a complete stranger. And I think that shocks people, especially if you've been together for a long time.
Absolutely. But you know, within a marriage, people can be married many times. And if it's a healthy marriage, you'll continue to grow and you'll continue to change your ideas, some of your habits, the way you philosophize, and you know, so you need to kind of try to keep up with the growth in each other, and you're right, sometimes you may come out with something that doesn't sound like you, and you may feel really good about that, as a matter of fact, or you may not, but that happens.
And I think that goes a little bit to expectations. And I think, again, that's where couples struggle, is because we have this expectation that we love each other and therefore everything should be smooth sailing. But it doesn't work that way.
Exactly, yeah. We have each other who have, and we each have differences. And in fact, that's what makes us grow. Strangely enough, you don't want somebody who thinks exactly like you, because marriage would be pretty dull and you wouldn't grow. The growth in marriage comes from understanding each other's ideas and adapting and thinking into the mind of the other person.
And that's where real intimacy is.
Absolutely. That is where the growth comes from.
In fact, we have one of our snuggles is called Avoid the Golden Rule to Improve Your Relationship. It's the golden
rule. Oh, dear.
Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. And we give an example where somebody plans a party for the other one, a special surprise party. Maybe Beverly wants to
talk about this woman has a surprise party for her husband, and all the people show up, and after it's over, she said to him, gee, you just didn't really seem that excited about this. And he said, well, if you really want to know how I feel, what I would have liked is to play golf with my friends and then to have a nice, quiet, you know, private dinner with you in a nice place. And that's what he would have liked. So she
right.
was following the golden rule, which she thought that's what he would like.
Because she liked it. She wanted
right.
a surprise party for herself.
Right. And so instead she could have thought of what we call the platinum rule, which is do unto others as they would want you to do unto them. Which is
oh, I like that.
Right.
And, which is and very different than the golden rule. And doing it, we think of, oh, this is perfect. But we're constantly thinking of the golden rule, and it backfires. For example, Beverly likes yogurt. I like anchovies. And if I was following the golden rule, I would say, oh, I love anchovies. I'm going to buy some for Beverly, which she hates. And she
right.
me, and we both feel terrible.
Well, and part of that is being willing to learn about the other, because what you guys are kind of describing goes along with the concept of the love language, the whole love language concept of learning to speak your partner's love language when we generally, you know how, what makes us feel good, but we have to be willing to learn and accept what makes our partner feel good, even if that's very foreign to us.
Right.
That's right. That's what we call the spice in a relationship. That the relationship is full of different spices. And like John said before, if you're both filled with the same kind of spice, it's not very exciting. So there's the good and the bad with all the spices. But that's why you're attracted to each other initially, because you are different.
Right. So where can people find more about this concept? I love the platinum rule. I think that's great. And other concepts that you guys promote.
Actually, we were interviewed for the Wall Street Journal, and an article was published in yesterday's Wall Street Journal called "The Calmer Division of Labor at Home."
Yeah, that's a biggie.
Schallenberger, and we're quoting there. In fact, there's a chart there that has a lot of our ideas in that. But,
quotes, right.
yeah, but the best place to go is our website, powersnuggles.com.
Okay, so that's snuggles with an N, right? Not struggles.
Right.
That's right. It's the good stuff, the snuggles.
The good
snuggles.
Stuff.
powersnuggles.com. In fact, there are four videos. They're short 2.5-minute videos on there that give examples of four of the snuggles in our book. And from there, they can hit Power Snuggles on Amazon to buy the book, either in electronic form or in paper form.
And we're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Great.
So if people are interested in being on our Facebook page because we do put out information regularly.
Okay, so that's a great way for them to get consistent information from you.
You can get that from the
Twitter
website.
Is at John and Beverly.
But you can reach both of us from our website.
And the website is probably the easiest part,
Okay. Well, so listeners, we've come to accept struggling in marriage as the way it is supposed to be. But in truth, it doesn't have to be the norm. And in fact, it never did have to be the norm. So what should be the norm is learning how to manage your differences and your emotions and to negotiate to a relationship that feels really good for both of you. In order to do this, though, you have to learn to drop your end of the rope. And I challenge you to stop pulling on your partner and start pulling with them. If you don't know how to do that, you're not alone. But now that you know it is possible, taking the next step, learning how to do it, is now up to you. So join me next week when I will be talking about the one thing you can do instantly to be happier in your marriage with my guest, Dustin Reichman. And until then, stay loving.